Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Ocean Lovers Podcast. I'm Kirsty, and I have Katie here again, and I have Hi. Erica Worth here.
Howdy.
Hello, hello. I'm glad that both of you guys are here, and you guys get to meet each other. I'm
yeah, so happy. Exciting.
Exciting.
So today's episode is going to be a very chill episode. We are going to just kind of give little updates in the beginning, and then we are going to just talk about some interesting articles we came across. And so we'll kind of take turns going around chit-chatting about what we found, or if something's interesting about it, we'll kind of talk about it and go from there. So I know, Katie, you and I posted on our Instagram this past weekend about the places we went. So we'll talk about that in a minute. But Erica, is there anything that you want to bring up? I know, you know, surprisingly, when we were texting last night, I didn't realize how long it's been.
I didn't either. I think you said March, and you were like, let's do an updates episode. And I was like, I don't feel like I have that many updates, but it has been a minute. So I was like, oh, yes, because it seemed like it had been sooner than that.
Like not even a month. We were so like used to recording almost all the time.
No, I've been super busy. I can't remember if I said this the last time or not, but I got my captain's license. I did start captaining for a boat in Moss Landing that does tours looking at otters. So that's been a lot of fun. It's a very good like first captain's job, you know, because I'm not dealing with like a ton of ocean elements. And you know, the boat kind of is terrible. It has a lot of mechanical issues, which is
kind
of a good thing for a first time captain. Because there's a lot of like, I'm just thrown into scenarios that like, it's like, okay, figure out how to deal with it. Like, obviously I'm trained, but like, it's like, okay, like, you know, I have to deal with, a boat that's not the most cooperative sometimes, which is a good thing, I think. But yeah, I've just been getting more experience like driving, and it's looking like I will probably captain for the company, the Whale Watch company that I work for next year. We did get a boat, another boat. So my boss has been talking about having me drive that one, but I don't want to jinx anything. So who knows?
What?
So that would be a lot of fun. But I've just been working a lot. I took a break from Breaching Extinction, the podcast that I have, just because I wanted to focus on, you know, my captain's stuff and everything. But we just started season 4 again. And so I'm like back into doing that. And that's been fun as always. But yeah, let's see. In the last, since March, I have checked 2 species off the bucket list. I got to see Baird's beaked whales that were friendly. It was crazy. They were circling our boat and blowing bubbles. That was like such an incredible, like random find. And then I got to see a sperm whale like a month ago with some friends of mine in Ventura. So that was
so jealous.
Pretty amazing. Yes. It was probably the funnest whale that I've ever found, because with all of the other whales, we go out onto the ocean, we look for them visually. And then with this guy, we had a hydrophone, and we went out with Ryan Lawler, who's the owner of Newport Coastal Adventures. And he brought out this tool. I don't know if it has a name, but essentially it's kind of like an ear, like for the hydrophone, and you can turn it so that you can hear what direction the whale is coming from. So he put the hydrophone in the water, he heard the clicks, we went into like the general direction where we thought the animal was, and we had reports from the day before that it was traveling west, so we're like, okay, let's go a mile west, stick the hydrophone back in the water, and then see like what direction it's coming from. And so he used his little tool, and we just kept kind of getting the direction, and we would go like a mile, we'd stop, we'd like, you know, move the little tool around and then continue to do that until we found it. And it was like, it was so incredible. Sperm whale has been like probably the highest whale on my bucket list for a while. And now I've seen Baird's beaked whales. And now I'm like, I would like the ocean to calm down because I don't want to see everything while I'm only 26. I still haven't seen like pilot whales or narwhals or whatever, but there's been a lot of activity on the bay. So
yeah. That's so cool. So did you guys see the sperm whale surface at all, or just hearing the clicks?
No, we heard it. We saw it surface. So we got into the general area, we saw a blow, and then it was the sperm whale. It's pretty obvious when you see a sperm whale blow because it's at a 45 degree angle. So it doesn't look like your typical humpback blow, which is most commonly what we see in this area. And I believe what they most commonly see down near the Channel Islands down there. So that was pretty incredible. And I don't think that this individual has a name, but I'm pushing for its name to be Peaches, because Peaches has there. And there's another sperm whale named Mango. So just, aww. I feel like to keep it the fruit theme, this whale should be named Peaches.
Oh, how cute. Does Happy, is it, I can't talk. Oh my gosh. Are they on Happy Wheel? I mean, I know they mainly do like humpbacks, but
understanding, and obviously I'm not like somebody affiliated with Happy Wheel, but from my understanding, they like it when you submit like anything. Obviously it primarily focuses on humpbacks, and like they'll give you data on those humpbacks, but I mean, I think it's just helpful for researchers to have data. So if anybody listening to this podcast happens to come across any odd species and gets pictures of like tail flukes or dorsal fins or blows, or just like, you know, videos or pictures from interesting encounters, it's always nice to send them to Happy Whale or and or Cascadia Research. Send them to everyone.
Yeah, you know,
providing more data to people is always helpful.
Yes, that would be really cool to see. Yeah, maybe you should try to submit your photo and then try to like pin the location to Happy Whale and see what happens.
True, I could do that. I'm like honestly pretty terrible at Happy Whale. I just typically don't have the motivation when I get home from work.
Oh my gosh.
After work, I'm like, no,
Erica, it's science.
I know it's bad, but also I'm lazy too, because it's like that phenomenon I forget what it's called, but it's that phenomenon in psychology where you just like think that somebody else is gonna do it, so you don't do it.
Yeah,
there was like that incident where that woman, like, I don't know, it was like in the 1900s, like she was like, man was like chasing her in the street and like literally ended up killing her because everyone else thought that someone was going to stop it. And so all these people ended up watching this woman killed. That's me with Happy Whale. Like someone is going to post it.
What a comparison.
I swear, Erica and I think so dark sometimes.
Goodness. Didn't expect that one.
I should have expected it.
Gotta keep it interesting.
Yeah. So you said the other sperm whale is Mango. So how did they identify that one? Like, is it like just local to the area a lot and they have like fluke photos of that whale too?
I think, yeah, there are fluke photos of it. Like there's, you know, of course, like biologists that are out a lot that see the same animals. And a lot of the people that collect these data or this data are people who are just like whale enthusiasts too.
Okay.
But yeah, it's a similar thing of like looking at the shape of the tail fluke and the dorsal fin. It's always helpful.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, hopefully somebody will submit. Hopefully they can submit some.
I'm pretty sure Evan is a friend of mine who's very good at sharing his photos with scientists. That's like his passion. So I'm sure that he already submitted those photos. So. Okay.
So that would be a really interesting post to make. If somebody were to upload some sperm whale IDs.
For sure.
Yeah. That's so cool. Now, are you, you mentioned with the whole instrument that he made for finding the clicks. I know you mentioned that you wanted to make something.
Yes. I do want to make something.
Oh, you haven't before.
I went to Ace Hardware to try to find the right materials. And I don't have they didn't have like the PVC pipes that I wanted, but also my dad is a cabinet builder in Ohio. And he's also just a very interesting and quirky guy who likes to build stuff. And one of his hobbies is building speakers. And like, so I think that him and I are going to work to try to come up with like a very, like what the system that he has is great, but if we can like optimize it in any way, we're going to try to do that. So we just, he's been busy, I've been busy, so we haven't gotten around to it. Also, we live in other states, so that's complicated. But yeah, at some point I do want to make my own little tool, but I have not done that yet, because again, back to the I am lazy after work. But the season is slowing down, so we're going from like working literally every day to like having 1 to 2 days off a week. So
so what's to be expected marine life wise in the next couple of months for in Monterey, Moss Landing?
Our humpbacks are probably going to be here for like another month or so. We always have a couple that are, you know, quote unquote resident humpbacks, and they're not really like, it's not like they live here all the time. It's like typically like you know, calves that are maybe not ready to make that journey yet, or moms that have calved the year previously, or, you know, just random humpbacks maybe that are also like me and feel lazy sometimes. but yeah, so they, they'll start going down to Central America, and then they'll turn around and start trickling back in towards March. Our gray whales will start coming down in the winter, and then they go all the way down from Alaska. They go to Mexico. They turn around, and then we, the springtime is always fun because we like to see them getting eaten by the killer whales.
Oh my gosh.
Just randomly appear whenever they feel like it. So the season is definitely starting to slow, but October is one of the best months for whale watching, in my opinion. Like, it's just calmer weather. You know, the animals seem to be a little bit more frisky, so that's probably what you can expect. But it's been a weird season, to be honest. It's been like very hit or miss. Like, we're very spoiled in the Monterey Bay. A lot of places you have to travel, like, you know, I would say on average we travel 5 to 10 miles per trip, like, you know, one way and then come back in. A lot of places you have to go out 20 miles, come in 20 miles, you see like one whale and like that's your trip. Like, we're very spoiled in the sense that like we're used to having like tens of humpbacks to choose from, and like boats like spread out, you know, and everybody's kind of on their own whales. But this season we've had a lot more of like just like days where there's only a couple whales in the bay and they're not doing a whole lot. And that's just nature. Whales aren't going to do things all the time. But when it's been good, it's been really, really good, like crazy lunge feeding. Or like there was one day that there were 40 whales together, like usually, like, I mean, I've seen 40 whales in a day, like spread out, you know, across the bay, but these were like 40 whales, like together feeding. Mm-hmm. It was incredible. So
wasn't it that video that you posted with all the spouts?
Probably.
I think so. Yeah.
So there's been a lot of, it's been hit or miss, but that's nature, you know?
Yep.
Whales are cool no matter what they're doing. So, yeah, but who knows what to expect, but yeah,
cool. All right, Katie, what did you do this weekend?
Honestly, it was a bit of a hectic weekend. It was my birthday weekend.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. But yeah, so I took Instagram followers to Central Park Zoo.
Yes.
It's a sister zoo to the one that I interned at a couple years ago. So it was interesting to see how they run things differently.
Mm-hmm.
Got to see some female sea lions, a couple harbor seals, a few penguins, and I got scared by an owl.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, there's a big eagle owl at the exit of the penguin exhibit, and owls are like my biggest fear, so I got a little spooked there.
Are they really?
Birds freak me out a little bit. But
really?
Yeah. Oh,
interesting. Yep. Okay.
Yeah, and then I went to a Metallica concert literally right after. So it was a really crazy day. But it was fun. It was interesting to post on the Instagram and bring everyone with me and stuff.
Yeah, it was really cool to see the videos and us kind of go back and forth a little bit. Yeah. So hopefully, I was even thinking too, I'm like, maybe I should give her a heads up, like when I'm about to post a couple, that way it's not like, look at the penguins. Oh, look at this sea otter over here. And everybody's like, what?
Well, that's but it actually worked out. Helps.
Yeah. It worked out for sure. Yeah, that was really cool. Hopefully everybody enjoyed that. We could do more of those.
Yeah, be fun.
Yeah. And then as we were just talking about, I went to the Elkhorn Slough, which was really cool because we had just talked about them on our recent episode. So it was their annual open house, and I'm assuming that they haven't had it in a couple years. So they were really excited to open back up again. And that was a lot of fun. It was very kid friendly for sure. They had a lot of activities. Let me get the flyer out so I can.
It looked really fun.
Yeah, it was really cute. And they had a lot of activities. I was sitting there. I was like, oh, I wish Avery was old enough to do some of these little crafts that they had for the kids. But yeah, they had Noah out there. They had the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. Let's see, they had another foundation out there. I think it's just the Elkhorn Slough Foundation. They also had someone out there that was showing off like native plants to the area, and that was really interesting, just kind of like look over everything that's more native to that area and what they're trying to preserve and their reasoning behind it. And then they were also selling it as well, but that was really cool. I guess they mentioned that they get sponsors, and they tend to buy pieces of land around the area, and then they just kind of leave the land alone, or they'll use it for like the benefit of the rest of, you know, to preserve the native plants. Like they have an area where they someone goes and will grow the native plants from seeds and everything, and then they will, you know, eventually put them out or sell them and little things like that to kind of help out the area. I'm trying to think. We went on a 2-mile hike, which was, it was super nice. It was overcast, and it overall was just really like quiet, and it was just, the water was pretty calm. Surprisingly, we didn't see that much wildlife. I was actually a bit surprised on the little hike we went to. Erica, have you been to the Elkhorn Slough like area where like the reserve where the trails are?
I haven't like gotten out and walked around. I've done like some of the stuff on like Dolan Road and whatnot, but I haven't gone and walked around the slough. Obviously I've been in the slough because I go like all the time. But I mean, it's just like, I think the wildlife just moves around. Like it's always there. There's always otters and birds and stuff, but it's just like, where are they at that day and
time? See, the trail that I went on, so there was a couple, let me see, I took a picture of it. The one trail that we went on was called the South Marsh Loop. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's like, he kind of recommended that one because you stay closer. Like there's an area where there's like a lot of water that you can view. There was another one, it's called Five Fingers Loop, and there's really like no water in that one. And then the Long Valley Loop, there's I guess a new trail called Oak Trail, and it's very close to the, like you literally walk out of the visitor center and there's like a little trail that goes right there, but they were pretty much telling everyone to not go down that trail because there was an active bobcat in the area. So you know, just taking my 7-month old, hoping that we don't get attacked. So that was fun. I was like, shh, no, I'm just kidding. Mm-hmm. So the Oak Trail, yeah, it's closed off, but like the edge of the Oak Trail is like at the very end of the South Marsh Loop where we were. So like towards the end of the trail, you're going into more of like the foresty looking part. And like, I was like getting all paranoid and I'm like, okay, I'm going to stand on this side in case we see something, but they're more like nocturnal, so they weren't too concerned, but they were just being cautious with everyone. But it was a lot of fun. It was a 2-mile trail or hike trail, and it was so pretty. We technically could have went farther to this little place called Hummingbird Island where you have to like cross these train tracks, and it's just like a little loop, so you would still go back. You would like, instead of turning right to finish the trail, you would just kind of go over the train tracks. You would do like a little circle, and then you would have to like go back on the trail anyway. And it was getting a little later in the day, so we decided to kind of skip that part. But I will say that we were pretty close to the water at one point. And the only birds that we saw were the pelicans. We didn't really see much, which I love I love seeing the pelicans. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we didn't really see much of anything else out in the actual slough. I kept looking out for otters. I couldn't find them. Like, I could not see anything. It was really weird. And so, Erica, I was even going to ask you, because I know you're doing the boats over there, like, where are they more congregated at? Are they, like, in this, like, deep in the slough where those trails are? Because it doesn't seem like they're in that area right now.
I mean, I can't get back to where the trails are from where the boat is. We only go probably, like, maybe 3 miles into the
slough. Okay.
But, like, within those 3 miles, like, I've never had a day that I didn't see an otter, like... But I mean, it's kind of like whales where it's like they could be anywhere they want. There is a spot that they like to hang out right at the beginning. There's like a little eelgrass patch.
Mm-hmm.
There's this new little patch that's formed. So historically, there has not been any kelp in the slough, but now there's a little kelp forest that's growing in there. And so they hang out there. But they're, you know, I don't have any issues finding otters within the first like 3.5 miles of the slough.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, for some reason I was like expecting, I like had my camera. I still took some really like pretty pictures and was able to get my camera out, which was so nice. There's quite a few trees where the holes were just like covered. So that was really cool. I took some awesome pictures of those. Overall, it was a really cool experience. First time in the Elkhorn Slough. So that was really cool. Yeah. So what is an article that you found, Katie?
So something that I found, actually my mom sent it to me, and I had sent it over to Kirsty because I was just so baffled at first. But over in Tasmania, there were about 230 pilot whales that stranded up on the beach, and approximately 35 of them were still alive. And it was really interesting that when I was reading that almost 2 years ago to the day, they had another massive stranding involving about 470 pilot whales where more than 300 of them died. So it's very odd that the same time of year, the same thing kind of happened.
Yeah.
And there's obviously not like a set in stone, hey, this is what happened kind of thing, but scientists were kind of just expressing their ideas of what could have happened. I wasn't able to find any specific necropsy information. Mm-hmm. All I found was that all of the information that they did get led to the fact that it was just a natural event.
So weird for it to happen that many times though. That's
I know
the and same I time of the year too.
There was another thing in the same area. Yeah, it was like a couple days before they had 14 young sperm whales that were found dead in that same area.
I saw that. That's sad.
So yeah, I mean, all
there has
saying,
to be something more to it,
right? So what they were saying is it could be because like the matriarchy animal kind of either is old, sick, injured, and strands, and then all of the juveniles kind of follow. Or they were saying that the shoreline is sloped, so they could have been foraging for food, and then with the tides coming in and out really quickly, they kind of just got caught. It's just crazy to think that so many, like, all at once. But I mean, their pods can go up to, you know, 1,000, so
yeah.
It's just, yeah, it's insane to me.
Well, and the way, like, I would think, too, is, like, a species like that, wouldn't they learn from that? You know, like, knowing if something like that happened the first time, like, wouldn't they teach their young, like, the next year and the year after that? Like, this probably isn't the best area to come. Like, or is that just me, like, thinking too...
No, I mean,
so I feel like that's valid. Like, I mean, we do see them like translate other information over generations, but yeah. Maybe a different group of pilot whales, or maybe it was like, I don't know. I mean, there's so much we don't know about why animals do what they do.
I know, it's just so crazy.
I think the biggest thing was because of that like sloped beach was just like it interferes with their sonar and like they think they're deeper than they are. They don't realize that they're up on the sand, you know. But I read that
the slope beach interfere with their like echolocation
because it just said that they think that they're deeper in the water.
It's so weird. I thought that echolocation helped them to like understand their surroundings, so maybe it's just like the type of sediment or something, who knows.
I obviously have never seen the beaches, so I don't know what kind of like slope it's
at.
But I guess like with the tides coming in, if it's a deep slope and they're here,
that makes sense. Camera, yeah, but... that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know, it's really odd. And then a scientist, I didn't catch her name, but she also said that because it took place in the same time of year, like 2 years ago, it could suggest that there's a link to a seasonal marine heat wave, but she said there's just not enough analysis of the events to kind of rule that as the main thing. So yeah, very odd for sure.
Definitely. Marine mammals are fascinating in... We just never know. Whenever people like ask certain questions, like especially like when it comes to age or things like that, I'll just be like, this is how long we think humpback lives right now, but we could potentially learn more in the next like 100 years, because they're just like always surprising us and doing things that we don't expect them to.
Yeah, of course. It's just definitely something I think I want to keep tabs on, because if it's just like this thing that's going to keep happening, I hope people can get more information on it, kind of thing.
For sure.
Did you have any articles?
I can talk about some of the articles that I've covered on breaching extinction recently. There was one article where there was a scientist who was studying the morphology of belugas, and she discovered a narluga. So essentially she was studying the skeleton. She had a bunch of specimens from various museums, and she was able to figure out that they had their own phenotype, and that it was a narluga. They don't know much about it. They haven't seen many of them in like real life. But what she was also able to get from studying the morphology was that it seems like specifically the narlugas are bottom feeders. So like that's not common, I guess, for all belugas or all narwhals, but that was something that she did see in the hybrid animal.
I did hear about that. Very interesting.
I did not. Total side note, but I tried signing up for the Marman and I never got anything.
That's weird.
Yeah. Like it said that you had to be approved. Did I like go on the wrong website?
I've done it like years ago, so I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember.
Oh, there was, I just got an email from Happy Whale, and I'm pretty sure this is out to the public. But if you do get emails through Happy Whale, I'm sure you've seen it. But they're doing a memorial for Fran. We mentioned it on the podcast that she was one of the humpbacks that recently got hit by a ship. And she unfortunately died from the ship strike. And I guess they are going to be doing a whole memorial thing for her out in Moss Landing, I believe, going to take place at the jetty, at Whale Viewpoint, Moss Landing State Beach. I guess there's going to be music and a brief ceremony. Bring your own zero waste beverages and picnic. The event is free. So in case anybody lives in the area and wants to take place in that. So that's just kind of like a quick little... It was about a scientist found a new organism on the ocean floor in the... Caribbean, I don't know. Erica, is there a difference?
I say Caribbean.
Is it literally just how people say it, or is there...
I don't know for sure, but I feel like it's just how people say it. I personally say Caribbean, but I've heard both.
Okay. So it says, scientists discovered a mysterious blue goo organism on the ocean floor in the Caribbean. So this was found in August by some researchers, and they think that it could be some type of soft coral. It could be a sponge or some sort of tunicate. So they're not sure yet. It hasn't been formally identified. So hopefully we can get some more news on that. That's just kind of a quick little, there's not too much on there. But hopefully we'll be able to see some more on that. I feel like we're always finding something new. It's every week they're going to find something new if they're out there.
Sure. Yeah.
There's so much more to find in the ocean.
Definitely.
What else do you guys have?
I could talk about Schubert.
Schubert?
The seal.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I'm all just, Schubert.
Just a quick little thing. But yeah, earlier in the month in Massachusetts, a gray seal was found in a pond called Shoe Pond. And they tried to capture it and get a hold of it to get him care, but they couldn't. He kind of swam away. And then just on Friday, he found himself right outside the police station. So they decided to call him Schubert because of Shoe Pond, and they took him to Mystic, their stranding sector, and they're doing medical evaluation and trying to just make sure he's all good to be released.
Aw.
Yeah.
And what kind of seal is he?
It's a gray seal.
A gray seal. Oh, mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay.
They're the cutest, ugliest seals.
Aw.
Yeah, they're primarily what I worked with at the Stranding Center, and they're really cute as pups, but they're really ugly as they become adults.
Oh,
yeah.
Would you like to say something?
Avery's like, yes.
She's like, Mom, I have an article.
Do you have an article you would like to talk about?
The finding is that she likes boobs.
Yeah. She does. Pretty much right before we started recording, Erica was like, I'm going to be a little late. I'm like, that's fine. Because Avery decided that she wanted boob right now. We talked about Happy Whale. We talked about the pilot whales, the blue goo.
I didn't talk about Japan. If you,
I was going to say, yeah, if you, one of us can talk about it. Do you have a lot of info? I didn't write too much on it. Just kind of the general. I mentioned Taiji before, but the Taiji Japan slaughters have begun. So they started it in September 1st, and it's going to be a 6-month long dolphin hunt, or along with the slaughters, they also get these, they capture these dolphins for captivity. They're, I want to say September 2nd, they slaughtered some Rizzo's dolphins, which is just so sad because I see them all the way or all the time out in Monterey Bay, and just to see them there and then just knowing what they do, is it just breaks my heart. So I want to say it said something like there was 9 of them.
That's what they, I saw,
yeah. Yeah, that they slaughtered. And that was just the second day of their 6-month long hunt. I thought I had the article up. So for those that don't know the whole Taiji Japan, we did have somebody on the podcast that talked about it. I'd have to go back and look and see what episode that is. But basically they do, I think they have like different seasons of what they do in Taiji Japan, of like, as far as like what they are trying to hunt for. So they're basically capturing like, or slaughtering Rizzo's dolphins, pilot whales. They capture a lot of bottlenose dolphins for captivity, mainly the females. They'll capture some males for breeding purposes. And they like capturing the babies, especially if they're not like, if they're well, if they don't like have a bunch of markings and whatnot on them, they prefer those ones. But then at the end of the day, they do slaughter a significant amount of these animals. There's a documentary called The Cove. Yeah, The Cove is the biggest one. I don't know if it's still on Netflix or not, but it's pretty hard to watch. Took me like several times to get through it back in the day when it was first released. I just remember bawling my eyes out.
Yeah.
So pretty sad to watch. Obviously, we don't want to talk about a bunch of depressing stuff, but It is always good to cover these and kind of make them aware to everybody listening. So yeah, not so great news, but that definitely started. You can also follow the, the Dolphin Project on Facebook. And they go live a lot when these things are happening, when they're trying to capture them, capture footage live while they're trying to capture these animals. Yeah.
It's important too, when we talk about things like this from other cultures, a lot of times, and I don't know specifically about like Taiji, but I know that there are a lot of cultures where there are significant cultural ties to killing marine mammals. Mm-hmm. So it's very important to be like mindful of that as well, that a lot of these instances are highly nuanced. And while like it is like a sad thing, you know, Americans kill like fish and all kinds of animals all the time. But, you know, just like being mindful of other people's culture and not to like, you know, be like, oh my God, these people are terrible for doing this. Like it's mm-hmm. often like a highly nuanced thing. So I don't know. I can't specifically speak to that specific issue because I haven't done research, but I just wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we've mentioned that on the main episode where we talked to someone that actually went to Taiji, Japan. I will say too, though, I do agree with that, but I also find it kind of weird because a lot of the locals say like they don't eat the dolphin meat and things like that, but they slaughter them for the meat a lot. So maybe it's for like animal food too, I think I read. But I guess a lot of people don't really eat the dolphin meat anymore, which is kind of weird to me. So maybe it's a cultural thing that'll like die out someday because people aren't eating it like as much as maybe they used to. So we could always just hope for that, I guess. But yeah, I don't know.
I did read that some of the dolphin deaths were reduced about like 60% because they were, the locals were being informed like of the high mercury, you know, contents and like pollutants and all that stuff. And then, but that's similar to like what Erica was saying, is similar to the Tasmania event, because they were trying to figure out how they can kind of prevent this from happening, but they don't want to overstep because it is nature.
Yes.
And some people believe that it's like a blessing that these things happen so that they can have access. So it definitely is, you know, odd to us, but for others, it might be, you know,
really hard to understand and not really get it. Yeah. That's pretty much all I have for articles. There was one more, just very brief. I saw like quite a few of them, so you guys might have seen it. It was about a new island that appeared in the Pacific Ocean. Yeah. It stretches from New Zealand to Tonga, and I guess they have high density underwater volcanoes. Yeah. And I guess they recently had one, and from there it created a new little island. So hopefully we'll get some more information on that soon. But I thought that was really cool that that happened. I want to say, let me check the date here.
It's definitely recent news because I just saw like the headlines. Very for recent. It.
I think it's the September 14th. I think it says. But yeah, so we'll definitely post these articles. We'll post these articles on Facebook and everything for everyone to see. So if you guys can send your articles to me and I'll post it on the Facebook page for everyone. That way everybody else can read these too. And yeah, that's pretty much all I have. Hopefully we provided some cool information to everyone. We'll provide these articles that way you guys can all read them as well in case you're interested or you guys want to keep up with them for any other updates. And yeah, we'll have another episode next Friday for you guys. And thanks for joining us, Erica. Thanks for popping on and chit-chatting.
Yes, it was nice chatting with you guys.
Yeah, and it was good to meet you.
Yeah, it's good to meet you too.
Yeah, thanks, Avery. Thanks for coming along as well and making yourself known. Huh. Yeah. Okay. All right, guys. Thank you guys so much for listening. Bye.